Hello, everyone, and welcome to the 30th episode of the Next Stage Press podcast, where we talk theater and playwriting with the various artists of Next Stage Press. I'm your host, Gene Cato. Today's guest has been delivering us stories and plays that walk the spooky road, drawing on the works of Rod Serling, Richard Matheson, Roald Dahl, Ray Bradbury, and Edgar Allan Poe. Our guest spent time honing the craft of molding scares and morality in tight tales of terror. I am speaking none other than Los Angeles playwright Evan Boffman. Over the course of our conversation, Evan and I discussed such topics as how writing a version of the Christmas story for a youth group when he was only in high school jump-started his career. He ponders what horror says about the human psyche, and we explore the question, why is horror so appealing to young audiences? It was an incredibly insightful chat about how taking the collective walk on the dark side can give audiences a safe space to be scared before they return to the light. So, let's go to that conversation.
Hey, Evan, how are you? Thanks for taking a little bit of time on a Sunday afternoon to talk a little horror with me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to talk about horror and spooky things.
Oh, I know. Well, you know what? We're going to be getting into that season here pretty darn quick. So this seems like this is a it's an optimal time to talk about scary stuff. So I'm excited about that. I'm excited to get into talking about these two plays that Next Stage Press publishes with you, and just your thoughts in general on horror and plays for youth and things like that. Because I think that you're a writer that you have a very, very, very unique and special place that you write, and I think that's going to be a lot of schools in particular are probably going to be pretty interested in what you have to say about horror / theater for youth. So I'm anxious to get into that. But before we do that, first question right at the barrel that we always start off with, I'd love you to give a story about yourself, how you got into theater, what brought you into playwriting, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I've been an avid reader since elementary school. So I've always been writing since like late elementary, middle school. And it wasn't until high school that I started playwriting. I hadn't been involved in like church plays and musicals. And the individuals who were running the theater performances at church knew that I was a writer. So they asked if I would like to try to write a play for like the younger kids to perform in the summertime. So the very first play I ever wrote was a version of the Christmas story called Cowabunga Christmas. So, and then, it was like my humorous take on the Christmas story. And then after that, they asked me to write a second play about the story of Noah. And so my second play I ever wrote was called Lions and Tigers and Bears, Oh My. And so that was like a humorous take on what was going on, on that ship with all those animals and stuff. And then when I got to college, I actually went to a small liberal arts college here in California called University of Redlands to pursue a creative writing degree. At these small universities, they have all these opportunities that I think maybe you don't get at the larger universities, where I was able to be part of drama clubs and stuff like that. And I joined a murder mystery dinner theater troupe.
Oh yeah.
And we would put on murder mystery dinner theater shows for, as fundraisers for local charities. And after I performed in the first one, I thought maybe I can ask the producers, hey, can I try my hand at writing this? And then at writing the next one. And yeah, so my sophomore year in college, I wrote my first like full length murder mystery dinner theater show. And ever since then, I've really fallen into that love of playwriting. Although I do a lot of prose writing as well.
Absolutely. You know, it's amazing how these things always kind of overlap on one another, because this is the second week in a row that it feels like that whenever we're doing these podcasts, there's these strange little overlaps that happen, right. You know, as far as locale goes or something. This is the second week in a row that we've had someone that got into murder mystery dinner theater writing.
Yeah.
That's a very, you know, I've done that myself, and it's one of those things that there's a lot of, really trying to learn and pare down economy in that, and the way that you write, and I'm interested in that's interesting. I think you're the first person that I've run into that has a deep level of horror, that's known for horror, that started writing in church.
When I was in early high school, I wrote this, short story that I was really proud of, and I shared it with my mom, and she freaked out. She thought the content was like so intense, that she made me, she wanted me to like speak with our pastor, like, oh, is there something wrong with my son? You know, after reading this story about like, some guy who had to dispatch some like, rabid possums that got into his home or whatever in, you know, violent ways. And, what's really kind of ironic about that is the pastor at our church, who's actually like a pretty good family friend of ours, he was the one who kind of got me into like more adult horror. He was the one who was sharing with me like his collection of Stephen King books and things like that. So, yeah. I mean,
that's fantastic. Actually, you know, you wouldn't expect that. You know, before we get into your plays, I want to give you a second or two, because again, I know that you've written some prose and all that as well. I want to give you the floor just for a second before we get into the theater to just kind of tell everyone a little bit about the prose that you've written, in the event that people want to go out and grab some of your other work, before they do that. So there you go. The floor is yours. Talk about your prose.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah. I've written many, many short stories. I like the short form. So like short fiction and also like 10-minute plays, like that's kind of like my wheelhouse, but I have a lot of short fiction that's published in various anthologies and stuff. If you ever type my name into Amazon, you'll see it, you know, I've connected to all these different publications, but I actually have two books right now that are just my own. My first book was published a couple of years ago. It's a collection of short stories called The Emaciated Man and Other Terrifying Tales from Poe Middle School. So I am a middle school teacher. So I wrote that short story collection as kind of a gateway for my students who are maybe our reluctant readers to see like, hey, you know, not all books have to be dry and boring. I wanted to kind of, you know, write something that I thought, kids, horror fans could get into, and also adults can enjoy it, as you know, that's my hope, that it's like kids and older audiences can be into that. And then my new novella was just released this summer, called Vanishing of the Seventh Grade. And so that's a longer story, but again, also spooky, also scary. And again, the goal with that is to hopefully get those reluctant readers to pick up a book. Kids who maybe think they don't like reading, if they read something of mine, maybe again, it shows them, hey, reading is not such a terrible thing after all.
Absolutely. I think that's fantastic. You know, it reminds me of the time that myself, my wife, all, you know, in previous generations of kids grew up with those stories like Goosebumps and R.L. Stine and, you know, all of those things, just to kind of get kids. I mean, you know, and then, you know, just to give them something that, you know, because you have these books that are assigned academically, whenever they get into the, you know, just, I don't know. I'm just thinking about, you know, generations past,
right?
Even back to the Hardy Boys, Nancy Drew, all of that, you know, these collections of books and stuff that would get kids hooked on, and various stories on that. All right. So yes, everybody, if you're out there, go to Amazon we look Evan up on that and see if you can grab some of his other works in particular. Okay. Now on to your theater, as we start moving on to that, I've got in here, you know, we've talked about this already. You're known for your love of horror. And I would like to ask, we'll start with two questions on that. What is the appeal for you personally when it comes to horror? And why do you think that it continues to be extremely popular with younger audiences today?
Yeah. So for me personally, you know, I've been a fan of horror since, as you mentioned, Goosebumps and R.L. Stein. That's kind of like what got me into it initially when I was a kid. I don't know. There's just something about, like, it's exciting. It's kind of thrilling. Like, you never really know what's going to happen next in a horror story. I mean, if you read enough or see enough, yeah, you kind of pick up the tropes and stuff like that. But still, there's always that feeling of suspense and, like, you get, you know, the adrenaline is flowing in a good, you know, scary story. So for personally, that's one of the reasons I like horror so much. But also, I think another reason that I like it is it's a way to safely explore the darker sides of the world, you know, like the darker sides of the human psyche, or even just like, I'm probably never going to go to like haunted woods or a haunted house, right, in reality, but it's a way to like investigate that kind of mysteriousness, that spookiness, from the safety of a, you know, a seat in a movie theater or a seat in a, you know, in my home. I can explore that stuff more, you know, just safely. I don't actually have to risk my life or my well-being, when I'm exploring this stuff. So I think that's what draws me to it. What draws kids to it, I think, is probably the same thing. You know, it's exciting. It's, you know, it's, again, it's a way to explore things that you're probably not going to be able to explore in your everyday life. I also think, you know, I teach in a community that, where a lot of the families struggle with poverty and like gang violence and things like that. And I think that also reading, not necessarily just horror, but maybe horror, reading is a way to like escape, you know, it's again, a safe way to escape into a different world. You know, it kind of like takes you away from the horrors of the real life. And oftentimes in scary stories, there is a happy ending where like the monster is vanquished or the serial killer is, you know, defeated by the hero. And I think it's a way to see that, you know, evil and badness and darkness can be overcome, whereas in reality that's not always the case. I don't know. That's at least the way that I like to look at it. So
yeah, it's funny that you bring that up about kids and using it as a tool, because I have a 7-year-old, and that's one of the things that we're kind of slowly trying to actually dip her toes into the waters of being scared in a controlled way with entertainment. And being able to pull back again and realize that, you know, for the sake of entertainment, most of the time, like you talk about, the hero is going to win out. There is something that I want to talk about a little bit later when we get into this. And it was not one of the questions that I sent you, but okay. I think that you'll get a kick out of it just talking about it. Just because it's interesting also that you talk about writing for you know, 10-minute plays and all that, and you're really kind of getting into, you know, kind of getting into the format and the structure of like you know, Brothers and things like that from past, just how that is set up. We'll come back to this, because one of the things that most entertainment that we see today with respect to horror, yeah, it's not framed in the old school morality tales like the, you know, like they used to do it. I mean, you right. know, and you with your writing, mm-hmm. you seem to be kind of dipping your toes back into that again and putting a moral compass under some of the tales and stuff that you're writing. Right. And, you know, especially, and I think that's extremely wonderful, especially whenever you're writing something for younger audiences.
Right.
So now you talk about, you teach at a middle school, and yes. You describe that as a very scary place. Do you get inspiration for any of your stories or any of your writings and stuff that you have based on any of the kids that roll through each year?
Right. Yeah. Good question. I just started my 17th year of teaching middle school. I started right out of college. So like I was barely 22 years old when I started. And when I started, yeah, it was like the first years of teaching are rough. And definitely, I did not know what I was doing. I did not know how to manage a classroom properly, how to juggle all these different personalities and all the responsibilities of being an educator. Like, it was not exactly as how I envisioned it would be. So like those first few years, yeah, I had some struggles with students, but you know, it's now that I look back on it, it's not probably, it wasn't the students themselves. It was just the way that I was mismanaging, the classroom environment and stuff. I wasn't as skilled or as adept at it as I am now. Nowadays, like, you know, middle school is not a scary place for me to work, but I think initially it was a rougher environment just because I was getting my feet wet, you know? So definitely there are some stories that I've written that are inspired by things that happened, you know, in my classroom setting in my early years of teaching. And those are like a couple of those pop up in my short story collection, The Emaciated Man, where some things happen. And those are like lifted from experiences I've had in the classroom. But for me personally, nowadays, now that I'm a teacher veteran, I've got a really good handle on it all. And to be truthful, 99% of the kids are amazing. You know, they're really great. It's just sometimes those kids that are difficult, they sometimes, their personalities are so big that it seems to kind of cloud your overall judgment on how things actually are going. But yeah, the majority of kids are really sweet, really nice. They really are there to like want to do their best and make school a positive experience for themselves. Really, middle school is a scary place, I think, more so for the kids themselves than for us as the adults who work there. We can all relate to that, how we felt when we were young.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. School in general, as you were trying to navigate your way through that, is a scary place, or it can be. College can be a scary place.
Exactly.
So, exactly, for all of us. Before we get to your two plays, do the kids, whenever they're exposed to the plays and stuff that you've written, have you had any of them that have come up that have said that they've kind of seen an element of themselves in the character that you develop?
Yeah. I mean, whenever I share, you know, something, whether I've written it or not in class, we do like talk about the characters and the thematic elements that are, you know, present in that, whatever the given narrative is. And yeah, sometimes the kids do see like, hey, they can relate to this, this character. And maybe they, at the start, they didn't think that they could. I mean, that's the way with anything that you're sharing with your students, you're trying to get them to realize, hey, I can empathize with this character, and you know, I can feel connected to this character, and maybe I didn't realize that at the beginning. Empathy is a big part of what we're trying to get across to our middle school students, is learning how to be able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and see things from their perspective, and like you know, really feel for them. Even if they on the outside seem different from you, on the inside, many of us are connected in ways that can't really be seen, you know, just through our eyes. So, yeah.
All right. That's great. I want to give you a chance, because you mentioned that you're out in California. Tell everyone where out in California you are. You talk a little bit about your school, if you want to, give them a plug and hit that a little bit.
Yeah. So I live in Long Beach. And I teach for Los Angeles Unified School District. And the school I work at is in Wilmington. And it's a great place to work. I've been there for a dozen years now. And I'm lucky enough to be working in the electives department. And being able to like give kids a creative outlet. It's a really, it's been a very rewarding experience for me, and being able to share my own work with students and even encouraging them / forcing them to write their own plays and things like that. So, yeah.
That's fantastic. I love Long Beach. I used to have relatives that lived out there. It's been a while since I've been out there, but the Long Beach, that's a great area of California. That's fantastic. That's interesting that you I picked up on something in that last little bit that you said. You encourage your students to write their own plays. Have you always done that, or has that been something that you've brought to the program just over the course of the later years that you've been there?
Yeah, that's always something I've tried to incorporate in my elective courses, whether it's a creative writing class, because I do also teach creative writing at my school site, whether it's creative writing or a theater class, I always incorporate a lot of writing and reading, maybe much to the chagrin of some of my students. I mean, my background is obviously as an author and a playwright and a reader. So like I try to, you know, that's part of who I am, part of my personality. And I try to bring that out in my students as well. And teach my students how to write. They're very like very simple types of plays. And then once or twice a year, we'll do like a little anthology show. I'll take like the best of whatever the plays are, and we'll do like a little performance of it, like in the library. There's a little stage and we'll do it there. And hopefully when we do that, the students whose pieces are chosen feel validation, you know, that they've expressed themselves in a way and they feel recognized, that their piece has been chosen when we do that. So
I think that's fantastic. That's just such a, it's so important and it's so great that they get that exposure to, you know, just reading and creative writing together, just kind of as bookends of the same, you know, program as they're moving through. I think that's so important. It's gonna, that will set them up for just life.
Yeah, hopefully.
which is great. Okay, so let's talk about you, because everyone's gonna they're probably dying to know at this point. Horror, everyone, you know, most people love it. What writers influenced you over the years as you developed your writing style?
Right. So, as I mentioned, I'm really into the short form. So I really like short stories. And growing up, The Twilight Zone was like big thing for me. So Rod Serling, you know, and the writers on that show. And just I love speculative fiction. So like Twilight Zone is bringing in the sci-fi and sometimes the horror, and there are, you know, oftentimes it's commentary obviously on like what's going on in the real world. But what I like a lot about the Twilight Zone episodes, there's always like this little twist at the end. And so any story or any fiction writers who are able to like have a little twist at the end of their stories, I really admire. And I try to incorporate a lot of that into my writing as well, like some sort of unexpected turn of events occurring. So I would say the writers on the Twilight Zone, I would say Roald Dahl, he wrote some adult like fiction, some adult like ghost stories and stuff that I was really into when I was younger. Richard Matheson, who some of his short stories were actually adapted as Twilight Zone episodes. Ray Bradbury, Shirley Jackson. So those are like the short story writers who really like inspired me. Edgar Allan Poe too, as well, once I discovered him in school. All them kind of, you know, their takes on speculative fiction really inspired me to kind of try my own hand at that. But my work tends to have like more humor in it than those writers' work does. There a lot of those writers, their work is pretty serious and a little grim. My stories can be that way, but I also try to balance it out with some humor as well. For me, I think horror comedy is much easier to write than like straight you know, grim, dark fiction. So,
okay, that's a great list of writers that you just put up there. And that got me thinking, because I believe, well, first of all, I'm going to ask you, I'll tell you what my favorite Twilight Zone episode is. And I think Richard Matheson wrote it, which is Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
Yeah, that's based off a short story.
That's my absolute favorite. I mean, both versions of it, from the movie and from the television show. Yeah. I think both of them each have got some great things about it. What's your favorite Twilight Zone episode?
That one is definitely up there. I like Eye of the Beholder. That one is really good.
Is Eye of the Beholder the one where Burgess Meredith was in it? Is that the one where he's the...
That's Time Enough at Last, where he's the reader. Time Enough at Last. That one is really great too. But Eye of the Beholder is the one where there's the woman undergoing plastic surgery.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. That one's just has that twist. You know, like I said, a lot of those Twilight Zone episodes had like a twist at the end that was really, I just always thought was really cool. So yeah.
Right. That's great. That's an amazing list of writers. So there you go. If anyone is interested in this genre, back this up just a little bit, make sure you write all of those things, those authors down. As a matter of fact, I think they actually have a book out there of Richard Matheson's collected works that he's just,
amazing. Yes, I have one of his, yeah, and it has his novella I Am Legend in it as well, which is like, obviously that was made, it's been made into multiple film iterations. Richard Matheson's great. Yeah.
Okay, here we go. All right, so time to talk about your plays. We published two of your plays in one volume. There is Fear Pressure and The Dodo Challenge. Yes. And we want to take them in order. So first of all, I'm going to read the brief synopsis here about Fear Pressure, and I'd like for you to talk a little bit about the origin of how you came up with it and how it came about. Fear Pressure calls for a cast of, it's one male and three female, and it is a trio of high school girls sneaks into an R-rated movie, and each one's moral character is challenged by the experience. Yeah. So take it away. How did that one come about?
Yeah. So I love to read horror, but I've always loved going to the movies. I love, you know, not just seeing scary movies, but just going to the movies in general has been something I've loved to do since I was a kid. And in high school, that was just like one of the things my friends and I did, is we would go to see movies. And then sometimes, you know, before we were of age, we would sneak into movies without our parents' permission and stuff like that. And so, you know, that experience. So this, the basic premise of this is lifted from that, like something that I actually did when I was younger. And whenever I did it, I remember always feeling like we shouldn't be doing this. This is against the rules, kind of breaking the rules. And so I wanted to, but I always went along with it. I succumbed to the peer pressure of it. I knew it was wrong. Right. But I still always, in the end, still went through with it. So I took that idea of these three characters, and the main girl, Jen, who's in the middle of it, she's the one who's really got, throughout the piece, she's deciding whether to let peer pressure take her to the dark side or not. So fear pressure is always, it's a not so clever, I guess, play on peer pressure. And at some point in the play, I don't know, am I supposed to spoil what happens or no?
No, you don't have to spoil what happens. Just,
the peer pressure becomes a big part of the narrative itself. And that was the initial premise of it, was just kind of drawing off the personal experience I had. But then I wanted to try to challenge myself to write a horror piece that was like a non-traditional horror piece. So nothing that had like ghosts in it or zombies or like blood or anything like that. I wanted something to be, that was like, trying to think, what is something that's actually kind of scary for young people. And I think that is dealing with peer pressure, that's dealing with friendships and like how they speak to each other, like decisions in the moment, stuff like that, that can be nerve wracking. So I kind of took the horrors of that and made it into a horror, literal horror story here in this play. So
there you go. And it's one of those things, again, going back to what you were saying earlier, that a lot of times that, you know, just the simple things in life sometimes can be a lot scarier than exactly what you're talking about ghosts, goblins and zombies. So, you know what, a story like this, this is one of those, this is one of those plays and stuff that I think that a lot of schools would really be interested in, just because you know, you've got some great roles for the young ladies in there, and a lot of theater departments right now, you know, as is always the problem,
right?
Over the course there, there are more young ladies out there than there are young men that are in these theater programs. So again, you're going to want to pick up a copy of this in volume on this, because this is it's got four characters in it, and there are three of them that are for the young ladies. So let's
named go. After my sister-in-law and two of her sisters, by the way.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times my characters, I just name them after people I know in real life, and their personalities don't really align with what the characters are like. But yeah. All right.
We're going to move on here and talk about the other one that is in volume with this. I want you to talk a little bit about the Dodo Challenge, because this play has a very, very creepy premise. And I want to know how that came about. Here it is. This one has a cast of 12, and it's got flexible casting in it. And the story goes as follows. To impress her followers on social media, there you go, the world we live in there. Right. Xavia, a teenage girl, sneaks into the morgue to participate in the Dodo Challenge, which is an online dare to take a selfie next to a dead body. Unfortunately for Xavia, a dissatisfied spirit follows her home. Yeah. So there you go. Take it away. How did that idea come about?
Right. So this was inspired by a couple of different things. The first thing that it was inspired by was an actual challenge that I had heard about young people participating in online called the Momo Challenge. And so the Momo Challenge was, and you could Google this and find out more about it, but it was apparently a few years ago, there was an individual who wore this like freaky mask, and this individual called themselves Momo. And whoever it was like encouraging young people to do like violent acts, or even to like participate in self-harm. And I was reading that and thinking, God, that's awful. That's terrible. And are kids actually participating in this? And as I researched it more, it seemed to be more like, it was more kind of like an urban legend thing. It wasn't something that was actually a lot of kids were participating in, but this was also around the time when the Tide Pod Challenge was a thing, where kids supposedly were eating these laundry detergent pods, right? And getting really ill off of that. And I was just, it was that whole idea of social media and these challenges and kids wanting to participate in them. I thought, okay, what could be like a really foolish challenge for a young person to participate in? And then like, what could be the negative consequence for this kid to participate in it? And so that's, I came up with the Dodo Challenge instead, where, you know, dodos were these not very smart birds that are now extinct because they were not intelligent enough to stay away from hunters. So yeah, the Dodo Challenge is like basically my way of not very subtly, I guess, saying, you know, when you participate in some of these challenges, you yourself look like a dodo. You're not very smart. You're putting yourself in danger for no good reason. And so, yeah, it was inspired by those challenges that I had seen online and heard about online. And then it was also just like what's become really prevalent over the last decade are the cell phones in the classroom. When I started teaching, the cell phones was not really a thing, but now it's like an everyday thing where you've got kids who are so obsessed with being on their phones and being online and being on social media that they're like letting it consume them and distract them from what they're supposed to be doing in class. And so I wanted it to take also that obsession with social media and the telephone and incorporate it into a horror story as well. So
terrifying. I remember the Momo challenge whenever, when that was coming out a couple of years ago, because I had it was popping up. I feel like I did a search on that because there was also something that was, I feel like there was something that was popping up on YouTube as well.
Yeah.
And, I ended up having to take my youngest off of YouTube just because all of a sudden, you know, YouTube is like a maze to nowhere sometimes.
Exactly.
And, so we ended up having to do that just because, and that whole Tide Pod thing was just so, mystifying to me.
Right. Yeah.
The kids would be so influenced on that. This, the world of social media.
Yeah. I mean, there are these challenges now. I mean, it was more, I think the fad is over now, but there was one last year where it was like, record yourself destroying your school bathroom challenge or something. And so like, that was a thing where kids would just like destroy the school bathrooms and record themselves doing that. It's just, yeah, these challenges, and it's just, it's out of hand sometimes.
Yeah. And I can imagine being an educator, in a school system, that's going to be one of those things that it's difficult for you to need to keep up with it whenever these things are happening. But it's, there's so many of them. It seems like they just pop up, every day, and then they disappear just as quickly. Okay. So, you're going to want to get a copy of the volume. We're going to put a link for it in the comments of this so that you can grab a copy if you haven't. We have a lot of schools and stuff that I think could benefit from being able to putting these on basically as a full evening of theater. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about why horror for young audiences is kind of rare. Most people these days are exposed to horror earlier and earlier, it seems like, when it comes to film.
Right.
But, truly scary stories on stage don't come around that often. And
right.
Why do you think that is? Hmm.
Well, I think there's more than one reason to it, probably. I think one reason is maybe, I don't know, maybe teachers who are choosing what to perform maybe think that horror, I don't know, maybe kids can't handle the horror, right? Like, that's a genre maybe they want to stay away from. But I think, you know, at least in my experience, that's not true. Many of my students are into that scary stuff, like I had said earlier in our talk here. I think it's a way for them to escape some of the true life horrors that are out there. So it might be partly that the teacher might think, oh, this is just a genre that might be inappropriate in a sense for students, but I don't think it is. I mean, at least in the plays I'm writing, it's not like gratuitous violence and like gore and profanity, and it's not in like an R-rated film, that type of thing. It's definitely more age appropriate, you know? So that might be part of it. Another part of it might be just that it's, at least in my opinion, I think it's much more challenging to put on stage something that's like truly frightening. Because at least in film, you have the ability to edit things a certain way, right? Like, you can, or at least frame the camera so like the audience's eye is going to a certain place, so you can misdirect them in a sense. I think it's harder to do on a big stage where, you know, you basically, the audience can see the entire stage the whole time. Whereas in a film, you can have a character leap out from the corner of the frame suddenly just because you and the audience didn't even realize someone was there the whole time. So it's also kind of like a difficult thing to pull off, like a truly suspenseful horror piece, I think is challenging. That's why like I said earlier, it's much easier for me to write horror comedy when you intersperse like, yeah, speculative horror elements, but also some like funny dialogue or humorous goings on. I think that makes it more palatable. What I think though is like kids, if kids knew that the upcoming production that they were going to be a part of, or classes that were maybe going to go see the performance as part of an assembly, if they knew that it was a horror themed play, I think that they would get excited for that. That would probably be something that, you know, it's different than just like a typical piece of drama. I don't know. I'm not sure if I was very clear in anything that I was saying.
No, you did. I know, the more I think about this, I think that, I brought up the Brothers Grimm earlier, whenever we were talking, and I feel like that there is, there's a whole niche writing out there that probably if we were able to just, you know, take it back and put that moral compass underneath horror again and actually have it serve a purpose. Mm-hmm. As opposed to it, you know, I mean, it to, you know, horror, just like anything else, horror can be used to teach. Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, it is, and I feel like that if we could get more stories out there that actually used, you know, the scary elements in order to teach people, you know, a moral path to take, or teach young people, not people in general, I guess, maybe people in general, but yeah, young people in particular, you know, and just kind of go back to the roots of it. I think that, there's a whole new genre of writing out there that has long been lost. You know, I've said over and over again, if based on the way that the world is moving, if satire is ultimately going to be lost, then we need to create another genre to kind of take its place. And maybe morality tales through horror is the next one to kind of pop up. What do you think?
Bad idea. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, in these two pieces that Next Stage Press publishes, there definitely is lessons. There are definitely lessons to be learned, you know, for the characters, but obviously the audience who's seeing it as well. So yeah, I think that's what you're touching on is very true, that horror is something that could definitely teach. There are thematic elements that are in most horror stories that I think are worth checking out and diving into. Certainly.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're about to come up on time here. So I got a couple of other questions for you. Number one, are you working on anything right now that you want to tell us about?
Yeah. I, you know, as a teacher, I'm always writing new stuff for my students to perform. So that's always just like, it's an ongoing thing. I'm always writing pieces for my students in class. But I'm also part of two theater organizations here in the LA area. Force of Nature Productions is a theater company that I'm a member of. And I, you know, a few times a year, I'm lucky enough to get to write short pieces for them. And they put, you know, they produce them. The next piece of mine that I have with them that's going to be produced next month, it's kind of like a futuristic take on the Wolfman story. So it's like a werewolf in space kind of thing. And that's going to be part of their show called Tales of Tomorrow Origins, which is just like futuristic takes on universal monsters. And I was
all right, I already love that. So you gotta whenever that goes, you gotta make sure that you give us a website or something like that to follow that, because that sounds fantastic.
So I was assigned the Wolfman. Luckily I'm really into werewolves, but there's also a piece about creature, like a take on the creature from the Black Lagoon, a mummy one, an Invisible Man one, Frankenstein one. So that show that's going up next month. And I'm also part of Playground LA, which is a really cool organization. They, from September through March, they have a pool of writers. They give us a theme on like a Friday, and we have a weekend to write a new 10-minute play based on that theme. And they choose like their sixth favorite to do like a performance of later in the month. So that's kind of, that's like a really interesting way to like get my creative juices flowing. So like write to a specific theme. And also, you know, it's within a short amount of time. So that's Playground LA. And I think there's also Playground San Francisco, Playground Chicago, and Playground New York. So if there are any playwrights listening to this who live in those areas, they can try to get involved with Playground in those cities. And I'm always writing just prose as well. So I'm lucky enough to already have another book on the way next year. My next scary book, it's actually my first full length novel. It's coming out in April, 2023. It's called Bad for Your Teeth. It's another scary story for young people. And it's about a nefarious dentist. And so that's coming out next year. But yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, you got to make sure and keep up, which is going to lead to the next thing, because I'm sure that you're going to have some people that are going to want to grab some of those books whenever they come out. How can people find you if they want to follow your work?
Yes. So I am on Facebook, just my name, Evan Boffman. As I mentioned earlier, I have an Amazon author page, so you can find my books there. But a lot of my plays are also available for reading on New Play Exchange. So, yeah.
New Play Exchange. Everybody loves it. It seems like we get a plug for the New Play Exchange every week, because thousands and thousands and thousands of plays on the thing. Yeah. All right. Well, Evan, this has been great. I appreciate you taking the time in order to chat with us and give us a little insight on horror in theater for young audiences. Again, everyone, Evan's plays, The Fear Pressure and The Dodo Challenge, are published by Next Stage Press. So you can actually head to our website at nextstagepress.com and you can find out exactly where you can search either the title Fear Pressure or The Dodo Challenge, or you can search by Evan's name. Last name is spelled B-A-U-G-H-F-M-A-N. And Evan, it's been absolutely fantastic. Thanks for spending the time with us.
Thank you again. Thank you. Much appreciated.
All right. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
That does it for this episode of the Next Stage Press podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you enjoy what you're hearing, please leave us a star rating and a review, and let us know what Next Stage Press playwright you'd want to hear from next. Also, feel free to share our show to your theater friends and colleagues. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Shopify, Podomatic, or wherever you get your podcasts, and they are always free to listen to. Also, you can find all of our plays on our website at www.nextstagepress.com, where the first half of our plays are free to read, and licensing info is available there as well. Stay well until next time, and we wish you good health, happiness, and great theater. Goodbye, everyone.